Hello, everyone, and welcome to Module 4 of Advanced Aromatherapy, Therapeutic Application of Essential Oils for Clarity, Health, and Happiness, with David Crowe, titled Aromatherapy for the Respiratory System. This is your host, Colleen, at the Shift Network. Just a couple of reminders. You can find all the handouts that David is referring to on the course homepage under Module 4, and perhaps we will review some from Module 3 as well. I'm not sure. If at any time you do have a technical issue or question and you're on the telephone, please press 5 and I'll come along and assist you. And if you have a technical question and you're on the webcast, please type the question directly in the box and provide your email address so that I may respond. And that covers it for today. So a big welcome back to you, David.
Thank you, Colleen, and welcome back to everybody. I hope that you have had a very enjoyable 2 weeks of exploring essential oils. And before we start with the lecture part, I will just invite people to call in, raise your hand, and submit anything you would like on the webcast concerning your progress, concerning what you have been doing with essential oils. In the first 3 modules, I gave you a lot of information in larger categories of therapeutic functions and a lot of ideas about how oils could be used. So you already have quite a bit of introduction to how aromatherapy is done and therapeutic classifications of oils, as well as having some monographs that have some good recipes in them. And so I'll just go ahead and open it up with an invitation if any of you would like to share any stories about what you are doing with the essential oils and your adventures with aromatherapy so far. And while we are giving people a few minutes to respond to that, we can go ahead and turn our attention to the course page, where you can see the various files that we will be studying today. And we'll take a moment and go through these. One is at the top, titled Contagion. This is a slideshow. Go ahead and open that. It's a PDF. And of course, to get to all of these, just click on the title of Module 4 and the menu will drop down. So go ahead and open the PDF on Contagion. This will be the first part of our class today, is talking about the historical use of these plants and why these are so important for respiratory conditions and the antimicrobial science of essential oils, which is a very, very big part of aromatherapy. You can go ahead and open up the other PDFs as well, Essential Oils and Contagion. And this one is an article that I am going to unpack a little bit at a time. As we're going through the slideshow, then you're going to see a file called Major Oils. For Major Respiratory Oils, go ahead and open that. I will explain all of these a step at a time. Open the monographs for Modules 4 and 5. There's quite a lot of information here about individual oils. There's an article titled Protocols for Withdrawals. Some of you may have seen this in a previous advanced herbal class, respiratory therapeutics. This is a nice list that is specifically for this class and the next class, since we have 2 classes dedicated to respiratory system. And then we have a file on the webcast questions that have come in over the last few modules. So those are the things you would like to open. And you can also, while you are at it, click on the link above Module 3 and go ahead and open the file titled Monographs for Module 3, as long as you are at it. And we can go back to some of these oils from the last module, as some of these, for example, the tea tree, and well, actually almost all of these are also relevant to our module today. So now that everybody has files open and I have extended an invitation to you, I will just extend that invitation again and turn it back to you, Colleen, and I'll just say, does anybody have any wonderful testimonials or stories or questions or concerns about the use of essential oils so far?
Okay, thank you so much. I wanted to remind everyone to press 1 if you're on the phone to share with all of us. And from the webcast, I do see already one question or sharing from Ilse, I think, or Liza. I diffuse fetiver, laurel, lavender, and sometimes jatamansi near my head when going to sleep. My eyes are very dry when I wake up. Is it one of these oils that has that effect, or should I just put the diffuser further away?
Well, I would suggest keeping the diffuser further away. Could you give me that list again? There's vetiver and laurel and what else?
Lavender and jatamansi.
Right. Okay, so I would say that the oil that has the potential to actually be drying would be the laurel, and that's the one that has a bit of a cinnamon spice kind of note. The vetiver and the jatamansi probably will not have that effect. Lavender probably will not have that effect, so I would say you might just try taking that oil out of that blend. It could be that it is simply that one oil that is doing it. But in general, let's keep in mind that essential oils can be drying. And so if you are finding that something is too drying, then don't use it so much. And again, what you don't mention is how close is the diffuser. If you have a diffuser that is basically blowing essential oils on you all night long, I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing. You might want to just move the diffuser a little bit further away. So those would be the two answers I would give, is take the laurel out. It's not really a major oil for sleep, really. It's a good oil for the respiratory system, as we will learn today and next week. But the others are more for sleep, actually. The jatamansi and the vetiver and the lavender, those are relaxing. The laurel is really more of a stimulant type of oil. So I would take that out, try it, and I would also move the diffuser away from, diffusing directly by your head. That could be an issue. So that would be the answer on that. Anything else, Colleen? Anybody?
Yes.
We
have many questions.
Raise their hand. Oh, okay,
yes.
Good. Has
yes,
anybody called in?
Yeah, we have Ila, and Ila, you have the mic. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. So, David, what I'm finding when I'm using essential oils, either as individual oils or when I'm putting them together and using them as part of my energy treatment with clients, what I'm finding is that, I don't know the actual terminology, I can't come up with it, but the oils almost seem to have psycho-spiritual qualities to them. They work directly on the issues that the client is presenting in our session. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit more about it in terms of the intrinsic qualities. I know it affects the consciousness, and you've talked about that, but in terms of what it actually does to affect consciousness or aspects of consciousness that need to be addressed for the specific issue. Thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you. Very good observation. And we are actually going to be spending quite a lot of time exploring this question, because this is one of the primary ways that aromatherapy is very beneficial. And the link, of course, is through the olfactory system. And through the olfactory system, there is a direct connection to the limbic system. And with the limbic system, we are addressing the various aspects of our biorhythms and our emotional states and our moods and many things related to memory and so forth. And so we actually have several full modules. We're going to talk about this in modules 12 and 13 about aromatherapy for emotional well-being. And so we have two classes dedicated just to answering your question. And then we also will be talking about that coming up after we get done with respiratory and digestive systems. We have a module on treatment of the nervous system. And so the observation that you have made is very important, and it is the primary way that aromatherapy works, is through the olfactory system and the link between fragrance and emotions and states of consciousness, and that is directly through the limbic system. And through the limbic system, many other systems are therefore affected, specifically the endocrine system, which can therefore have very positive effects on hormonal balance and stress and the adrenal glands and the nervous system and the immune system and so forth. And so it's a great observation. And I would just say that would be the short answer that I could give now, is that is the mechanism that you are observing. You are observing that the fragrance, in conjunction with your therapeutic healing touch that you are giving, and the way that you are working with your clients, is helping them to be able to access probably emotional memory for the most part, and also doing that in most likely, I would say, I don't know exactly what treatment you're giving, but I would say that it's probably also a relaxed kind of state in a nurturing, safe environment. And so you put all those elements together of you and your healing work and your energy and your compassionate presence along with the fragrance of the plants, and then the person's nervous system relaxing from the work that you were doing and the fragrance going into their limbic system. And all of those things are equally important. So that's the short answer, and let's explore that more when we get to the modules that are specifically for that. But that's a great observation, and that is a very, very important aspect of aromatherapy. So thank you. Great comment.
Thank you.
Okay. Shall we do one more? Shall we do one more?
Yes, please, let's do that. And we have Gaia. Go ahead, Gaia, you have the mic.
Oh, hi, David.
Hello.
Colleen over here on Maui, Hawaii, where I live. And I'm wondering if you've seen the film that's out, Ancient Secrets of Essential Oils.
I have not. But the first thought that crosses my mind is, how ancient do they claim that essential oils are?
Well, they claim they're quite ancient, and I'm really hoping that you take a look at this film. It's the only film that's been done on aromatherapy. It's only been out for a few months, but I purchased a copy of it. I've watched it twice. And two of the things that I find fascinating and would love to talk with you about after you've seen the film is that they're taking essential oils orally in the film, and it's quite interesting to watch it, actually, but it's about an hour, 20 minutes, a little bit less than that long, and there's some beautiful parts of the film. I'm just hoping you had seen it so we could have a little discussion, because some of the information is contradictory to what we're learning at these sessions with you. So I'm open to all of it and learning and understanding and growing, yeah.
Well, for some reason, I have a suspicion that this was probably produced by a major multi-level marketing company. And the reason that I say that is because, first of all, essential oils are not really that ancient. The majority of essential oils have really appeared in the last 100 years. And anybody who says that they were using essential oils during biblical times doesn't know the history of distillation. They were using aromatic plants and preparations, as I have explained before. But
right.
that's a kind of mythologizing, you could say. That's a polite way of saying that they're stretching the truth a little bit, because the essential oil world has really just developed fairly recently. We know that distillation of alcohol goes back a couple thousand years, but the generally agreed on starting date of distilling essential oils was probably maybe 700 years ago at the latest. And even if it was being done earlier than that, it was certainly not being done on any large scale where lots of people had access to oils. It may have been, you know, an individual alchemist here and there that was producing something on a very small scale. So first of all, I'm suspicious about that claim that there's something particularly ancient about essential oils. And then, of course, when people like to put the word secrets along with that, I'm always rather suspicious, because all the information about essential oils and distillation and the use of herbs traditionally is widely and easily accessible. So when it sounds like that, it sounds like marketing. And then, of course, if the movie includes people taking essential oils internally, then we know that it's advocating unsafe use of essential oils, and that's basically in the realm of multi-level marketing. And we've unpacked that extensively, and everybody knows the reasons why we do not take essential oils internally, as I have explained.
The name of the MD that takes them and says, watch me poison myself like that, because it's Dr. Wenkler.
I don't know the name, but what I can say is that, yes, lots of MDs have gotten involved with this. And in my opinion, that makes no difference whatsoever, because I have heard horrible poisoning cases of patients that have happened because MDs have thought that, you know, they know how to use essential oils. And if you are taking internal oils and for yourself internally, that's your own choice. If you're giving them to your patients...
I actually don't do that. I don't take them internally, and
right.
The blends that I make for other people are topical blends.
No, that's great.
Topical blends, but I'm open-minded, and the film is really great film. It's really opened my mind to thinking about all the different possibilities and choices that I make as a mature adult that makes, you know, educated decisions. It's a fantastic film. It's a really good film. I don't know if you know of Dr.
My suggestion here, okay, let's wrap up this conversation, because I know that we're going to have many, many people that are always going to be debating the pros and cons of taking essential oils internally. All right, now this is an individual choice, and you are welcome to do that if you would like. But I have outlined my personal and my clinical. I'm speaking as a medical practitioner here also. My responsibility in this class is to tell all of you how to use essential oils safely and wisely. Okay, so I have given you all the contraindications at the very beginning. If people would like to go ahead and do that, that's perfectly fine, but there are risks involved, and the risks are very unpredictable, as we have talked about, because what may work for one person may cause a serious problem for another person. That's the responsibility that I have to you as a practitioner and an educator. Now, I'm going to contradict myself in the next two modules, and I'm going to tell you some very specific ways that you can take essential oils internally. How do you like that?
All of it. It's fine.
Okay, great. Well, would you like to go ahead and mention the name of the movie again for people who may not have caught it, who might be interested in checking this out?
It's called Ancient Secrets of Essential Oils.
Okay, now let's go ahead and jump into our lecture for today. And speaking of ancient secrets, that's a lot of what we're going to talk about now. So let's go ahead and I'll give you an overview first of what we're going to be covering here in this module. We're now moving into the specific therapeutic applications of essential oils for the respiratory system. And, in my opinion, this is one of the strongest aspects of using essential oils and aromatherapy. You will find that as we go through various modules, for example, when we come to the digestive system, when we come to balancing the hormonal system, when we come to working with emotional well-being and so forth, that essential oils and aromatherapy have different abilities. And I have explained this before in the first class, and I have said that in many ways, essential oils and aromatherapy are the first line of treatment that are highly, highly effective for certain kinds of things, and they are moderately useful for other kinds of things, and they're really not very useful for a whole range of things. And so this, again, is going to be one of the subjects that people will ask over and over again. And I will mention and remind everybody that you do have access to a consulting email, and you can contact me about particular questions, and that's where I do get a lot of the discussion material, actually, is that people send in a lot of questions, and one of the reoccurring questions that happens quite a bit is that people assume that essential oils will do all kinds of things that they really won't do. And really, that's best described in the category of metabolic disorders, okay? And so people think that there's an essential oil that's really good, you know, for treating cancer. And there's an essential oil that's really good for lowering blood pressure, or there's an essential oil that's really good for diabetes and so forth. And that's simply not true, okay? And that's also part of the misconception about essential oils that's being propagated out there. And that's because people are not putting essential oils into the bigger context of herbal medicine. They are a very refined, extracted, concentrated form of herbal medicine, but that doesn't mean that they are applicable as a complete pharmacy. Now, the reason that I'm saying that is because when we come to treating the respiratory system, we find that essential oils and aromatherapy are actually some of the most important of the herbal medicines, okay? They are the highly concentrated form of herbal medicines and the aromatic plants that are extremely beneficial for the respiratory system, and not just for treating colds and flus, but also for strengthening the respiratory immune system, and also for treating the atmosphere, and that means purification of airborne pathogens. So the respiratory system is something that is a major system that can be treated as with essential oils as the first line of treatment. And I'll go so far as to say that in my clinical practice, that what I have seen is that many, many acute and chronic respiratory conditions can be highly effectively treated using essential oils in various forms that we'll talk about today and next week as the first line of treatment that is even better in many cases than herbal medicine, all right? So in this case, this is a clear example of the real strong aspects of aromatherapy. But as we go and study other systems, we're going to find that, well, maybe we should actually be using the whole plant form instead. Or maybe this is not even a situation where essential oils are really that important. So this is also one of my responsibilities, is to help to sort this out and to put essential oils in the proper context from the medical clinical viewpoint. Okay, now some of the topics that we have to get into, contagion and the antimicrobial powers of essential oils. Now, this is a big subject and there's a lot to talk about, because not only are the essential oils one of the first lines of treatment for the respiratory system, which makes perfect sense because we're inhaling them, but as you know, they are also produced by the plants as part of their complex biological immunity as well. And that includes having various types of antimicrobial functions. So therefore, another very strong aspect of aromatherapy that is coming out is about the research into the antimicrobial powers of the essential oils. And so we'll talk about that. Now, this is a complicated subject because there's also a lot of misinformation that's being given about this as well. People are hearing that this oil will kill this particular microbe, but they're not hearing the big picture that, well, okay, it will kill that microbe in a petri dish, but it's not going to be very effective once it's in your bloodstream, okay? They will hear that it is effective for this at this particular phase of replication of that particular microbe, but they don't hear that it's not effective at another stage and so forth. And so there's a lot of very valuable information that we can explore, and this will also help us to understand when the essential oils can realistically be expected to have antimicrobial powers and when we should not expect them to do that. So this will all be part of the first presentation, the slideshow. We're also going to look here at the historical use of aromatic plants for epidemics, and then unpack some of the differences between the in vivo and the in vitro research. And let's go ahead and start. So if you would, please open the slideshow, the PDF. And we can go ahead and start with that. And let me also mention that you have an article that goes with that. Okay, and so what I'm going to do is I am going to basically cover the information that is in the article, and at the same time, I am also going to be unpacking a number of other subjects that are in the slideshow together. Okay, so let's go ahead and start together with the PDF. You should be looking at slide number one, which is showing some perfume bottles. Okay, and just to orient ourselves to this particular topic, these essential oils, as I have mentioned, have been around in widespread available use for about, in some cases, just a few decades. But they do go back, in terms of pharmacy, for at least 100 years, more widely available, and in perfumery, maybe even a bit further than that. But really, not that far back in terms of history. But what has been known is that the aromatic plants have been a primary source of medicine going back probably throughout human history. And that's what we would like to look at here, because really, if we're talking about the ancient uses of aromatics, that's a completely valid point, okay? That is historically accurate, is let's look at how the aromatic plants have been used for a long period of time and why. And if we understand that the primary compounds from the aromatic plants are the essential oils, then what we can see is that people were actually using essential oils. They were just using them in non-concentrated plant-based forms. Okay, so let's go ahead and move to the next slide. And this is going to show one of the traditional uses, okay? And this is a gentleman who is burning frankincense in a censer, and this is classical aromatherapy. All right, now this, you can make a case that this type of aromatherapy, this type of use of essential oils, it really does go back to ancient times. You could see something like this happening thousands of years ago in Egypt, okay, in Morocco. That is how essential oils were used then. And keep in mind that when plants are fumigated like this, when people use the aromatic plants for fumigation, that we do get the essential oil compounds into our respiratory system, and they do have antimicrobial powers in the atmosphere, and they do affect the limbic system through the olfactory sense, and therefore we are still getting aromatherapy and we're still getting essential oil compounds. But we're not getting them in a highly concentrated form, and we're also getting them with soot because the plant material is burning. So using a diffuser with a pure essential oil is a much cleaner way, a modern innovation, a much cleaner way of doing exactly the same thing. Now, there's something important here to start talking about, which is the ancient concepts of contagion. All right, so long before there was microbiology, the aromatic plants were used for their anti-contagion powers, and modern research has now extensively documented these powers in both the essential oils and the aromatic plants. Now, if we look at this, we find that classical medical systems like traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda didn't actually know the details of microbiology. They didn't have microscopes, and so they didn't have things. They didn't have terms like Staphylococcus aureus or herpes simplex. They didn't know about the presence of those microbes, but they had a general concept. They had a general understanding of it, and they used different terms. Like, for example, in Tibetan medicine, they had a clear understanding of contagion. They saw that epidemics moved from place to place to place, and they knew that there was something connecting it all together, contact with sick people or airborne pathogens or through food and water and so forth. And so we hear things, hear terms like wind worms, okay, to describe airborne pathogens. And in Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, there are these concepts of invisible pathogens such as wind heat or wind cold. That's mostly what we're going to be talking about in the respiratory treatment modules, something that is airborne. Okay, so they had a very fundamental understanding of contagion, but they also had a fairly sophisticated spiritual concept and philosophical concept about good hygiene and prevention and so forth. And so Ayurveda, for example, really elaborates a lot on how to prevent disease through the cultivation of good personal hygienic practices, all right? And using our mind correctly and not indulging in doing things we know we shouldn't do, how to have a good lifestyle, how to have a healthy diet, and so forth. And what they found, one of the basic things that was understood, if you go to slide number 3, one of the things that is common to all of these traditions is that there is a strong link between the classical concepts of contagion, illness, and smells. And that's where the aromatic plants come in, okay? And so it was very obvious to everybody, even though they did not have microscopes, people could still smell the presence of pathogens coming from sewage and sick people and rotting garbage. They knew that those were sources of illness, and they gave them various names, like, for example, malaria, all right? That term, malaria, it means just that. It means bad air. So in places where there's bad air, there would be mosquito infestation, and that would be associated, you know, with the spread of the disease. And so the bad vapors, therefore, were identified as being the source of the pathogens, which is completely correct. And they were called different things like evil vapors and evil spirits. And so the link was made between the sense of smell and contagion, even though they couldn't see the microbes. So if you now go to slide number 4, this is a concept of contagion, and this is called miasma. All right. Now this is a picture of a miasma during the Civil War, and the concept of miasma is that it is a vapor or a cloud of mist that causes disease, okay? And so even though people didn't know about microbes, they understood that something was connected to the atmosphere, okay? And this was actually a very popular and well-established concept up until about 100 years ago, really, that there was still that idea that wherever there's bad smells, there's going to be illness that's going to be transmitted. So if you go to the next slide, this is actually a sad picture of life in many parts of the world. For those of you who have traveled, maybe you've been in India, maybe you've been in South America, maybe you've been in Central America or Africa. Even in the United States, we have scenes like this. And this is basically the modern version of a miasma. Okay, this is large landfills where people, you know, they basically live in these areas, they work in these areas, and these are sources of a huge amount of environmental toxins. And so this concept of miasma, okay, is very relevant, and we see it not just on a large scale. You can go ahead to the next slide, number 6. It's not just here that we're concerned about it, and not just, you know, extreme examples such as this that's relevant to respiratory health, because we have it also in our homes, okay? I was just in dialogue with a gentleman today who is a teacher in a school, and he's having to work in a classroom that's a trailer, and it appears to be affected by mold. Okay, so it's the same idea. What are we going to do with aromatherapy? Well, we are protecting ourselves from these evil vapors. And if you go to number 7, you can see another picture of the glands of the essential oil-containing plants. And this is something that we've already talked about. The aromatic plants have always been the primary antidote for the bad vapors, all right? That's the link with respiratory health, is that when you are talking about essential oils in the respiratory system, this goes back a very long ways, okay? This goes back, if you go ahead to slide number 8, this actually goes back to the Stone Age, okay? I have found research studies that were done on Stone Age settlements from 77,000 years ago, and they have found the presence of aromatic plants that were there that showed that their essential oil content had insecticidal properties. And so we see then that the ancient use of the aromatic plants is very well established a very long way back, and it's my personal suspicion that actually aromatic plants were probably one of the first groups of plants that Homo sapiens were attracted to using, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago. So in that sense, aromatherapy has been around a very long time, but it's been in the whole plant form. So now if you go on to the next, you'll see a modern version here. These are lavender bundles, and this was used in old Europe. This is another form of aromatherapy that was used for centuries and centuries because in old Europe, the conditions of hygiene were absolutely terrible. Old Europe was probably one of the most polluted places on the planet because they just dumped their raw sewage just out the window every morning into the street. There was no public sanitation, and that's how a lot of the epidemics were started, of course. Very, very poor hygiene. And so what they used to do, instead of having a good hygienic system, is that they would just cover everything with aromatic plants. And this is something that you should also think about. The more you have the aromatic plants in your environment, the stronger your immune system will be and the more pure and cleansed the atmosphere of your home will be, and it doesn't have to be a diffuser. It doesn't have to even be essential oils. It can just be the aromatic plants. All right, so if you go to the next slide, number 10, this is an image that some of you might know what it is. This is a plague doctor. The plague doctors were going around treating people with the plague, and they were wearing a mask. And if you know anything about this, you say, well, what was in that mask? Why do they have that mask? Well, that mask was full of aromatic plants, okay? So they were basically breathing an aromatherapy filter, and they would put things in it like lavender, fresh lavender flowers, and cinnamon and clove and things like that, and that would, I'm sure, reduce the risk of contagion significantly, along with wearing the robes and so forth. All right, so that's like extreme aromatherapy. Now, if we go to the next one, you can see, now I'm just going to go through a list here, several slides in rapid succession here, to show you examples of various ways that aromatherapy was done before distillation of essential oils became commonplace. And so this is a picture in India, and they burn many, many things. In this case, it's camphor specifically. If you go to the next one, here's an ancient picture of aromatherapy. And so, the use of the aromatic plants in ritual and ceremony, very important. There was a lot of formulation of very interesting kinds of medicinal and psychoactive kinds of compounds that lifted people's consciousness for prayer and meditation and so forth. If you go to slide number 13, this is a modern version of the same thing taken in India. And you can see towards the bottom of the slide there, you'll see that there's these buckets, and these buckets are full of all kinds of flowers and aromatic oils and resins and so forth. And so this is a puja, fire ceremony. And basically the idea is to give offerings to the fire, and the fire represents the mouth of God. Okay, the fire is, well, what is fire? Fire is sunlight that has been captured by the plants. And what is sunlight? Sunlight is stellar energy. And what is stellar energy? Stellar energy is the creative power of the universe in the fire element form. Okay, and so this is a way of basically worshiping God. through worshiping the elements directly. And so the fire is fed with these various aromatic offerings. So in addition to the spiritual benefits of prayer and meditation and the social benefits of everybody getting together, what else is happening? When you put a whole bunch of aromatic plants on a fire like this, the room becomes full of smoke. And so in a certain way, it's like a group vaccination. Everybody is breathing in the aromatic molecules, and that's having a very good effect on the respiratory system. And so let's continue. This is just to show that these things are universal, okay? Next, we see Palo Santo burning in the Andean ceremonies. And this is one of the oils that we're going to be studying extensively in this course. It's not only antimicrobial and good for the respiratory system, but it's a very psychoactive aromatic plant. And then to the next image, you'll see the sweat lodge. And the sweat lodge, of course, uses a number of aromatic plants. They use tobacco, of course, but they also use sage and they use cedar. And, of course, these have a purifying effect on the body and the mind. So if we go to slide 16, you'll see this is our modern version of aromatherapy in a spa setting or maybe even in your home setting. Maybe this looks like your bath where you get to soak in a bunch of flower petals. And so this is modern aromatherapy. Then if you go to slide 17, you see the herbal garden. And what I'll mention here about the herbal garden, and I've already alluded to it by saying that the more aromatic plants you have in your environment, the healthier your environment will be and you will be. This was well known in traditional cultures. And so in many places, especially in the tropics, there was a lot of planting of aromatic plants around the home for mosquito-repelling functions and so forth. Another example of this would be lemongrass. If you go to the next slide, and lemongrass was traditionally used to clean the homes. What they would do is actually take the fresh lemongrass and dip it in buckets of water and then rub down the walls and rub down the floors and so forth. And this came through the Caribbean into the United States in the South, actually. So lemongrass has been part of our aromatic tradition as well. If you go to slide number 19, that's when we started. Here's an image of how the early aromatic compounds were first made. The distillation, as I said, is a relatively recent development, but aromatic compounds go back thousands of years without a doubt. And this is how it was done. The aromatic plants were basically infused into different kinds of carrier oils. And this will be something that you will get some information on as we go, a step at a time. And so if you go to the next slide, number 20, you'll see that you'll see an image of a traditional Indian attar vendor. Now, you know what an attar is, A-T-T-A-R, an attar. And the attar was not just a classical Indian perfume that was used for enjoyment, but it was also a medicine in Ayurveda that was applied to the marma points, the acupressure points, for therapeutic benefits. And the term attar also refers to a type of physician, a type of healer, who uses fragrance as the major therapeutic modality. And so the attar maker also made a wide variety of perfumes and incenses, and these had both medical and magical kinds of applications. So let's go to the next image here, and this is distillation. Okay, this is an image of alchemical symbolism, and alchemical symbolism was closely linked, actually, to the development of the distillation process. But most of this, you'll see that most of the alchemical literature that shows distillation equipment goes back at the most about 500 years. And so the process of distillation was both literal and metaphoric. It was both the actual extraction of the spirit of the plant, but it was also the extraction of spirit from matter. And so this is a big subject. What is alchemy? Well, alchemy is about distillation. Essential oil distillation has an alchemical side of it. Distilling plants is actually a very interesting spiritual kind of undertaking. So this was the distillation of roses, specifically, an image here, distilling roses. I'm sorry, that's that's the alchemical side. The next slide is the distillation of roses. This is the oldest form of essential oil, the oldest species of essential oil that we know historically. The first one to be distilled was rose oil, and it is attributed to the Arab physician Avicenna. And that was approximately 700 years ago. And so rose oil now is, you know, a huge business, and is a beautiful oil, and we'll be studying it. So go ahead to the next slide, and now we have spices. And it's important to remember, if we're talking about antimicrobial benefits, the primary source, the primary form of medicine that people had for centuries, they didn't have antibiotics, they didn't have antimicrobials, they didn't have antifungal medicines. They had spices, and that's why spices were so valuable. And the spices, because of their antimicrobial powers, were also the basis of food preservation. And let's keep in mind that still in many parts of the world there are not refrigerators, and the refrigerator is a relatively modern innovation. And so food spoilage was a very, very big problem, and the aromatic plants were the primary antimicrobial way of preventing food spoilage. So let's go now to the next slide, and you will see here an interesting image. And those of you who are gardeners and beekeepers will know what this is. This is the integration of aromatic plants and apiaries. Some of you may know that the bees are under a lot of stress from a lot of different directions, from pesticides and GMOs and a lack of food in their environment and many, many issues. But one of the things that beekeepers now are learning to do is to plant the aromatic plants around the hives to protect them from the mites. The mites are the Varroa mite is a very big pest of the hive, and can cause a lot of problems. And so this is an example of how the aromatic plants and the essential oils can actually be used for other creatures other than ourselves. Okay, now, let's continue with our discussion about essential oils for the respiratory system, contagion, and epidemic. So if you would please go to the next very sad-looking image. This is a picture of one of the major epidemics in Europe. And the reason that I'm going to talk about this is because probably by now a question should have come up in your mind, and that is, if these aromatic plants are so good for these antimicrobial powers, if these plants have so much anti-infectious, antibiotic, antiviral powers, and they've been used in all these ways, then why is it that there were these massive epidemics? Well, that's a good question. I'm glad that you thought of it. And the answer is political. The answer is that infectious epidemics are not caused by microbes alone, okay? In order for the microbe to flourish, there have to be numerous conditions in the environment, in the economy, and in the society. And so it is well known that when there is economic collapse in a country and there is great poverty, that epidemics start. It's well known that epidemics follow war and conflict, and so forth. Now, this was written about, and I'm just mentioning this to point out the brilliance of the old Ayurvedic doctors. This was written about 2,500 years ago by the Ayurvedic physician Charak, and he pointed out that epidemics were actually caused by corruption in the government. And the reason, the way he explained it was to say that when governments become corrupt, that people are misled. And when people are misled, they leave behind a spiritual, hygienic kind of lifestyle of living in harmony with nature, and they start to become involved in all kinds of activities that are unhealthy for them and for society. And this leads to all kinds of increase of heat toxins in the atmosphere. It's very interesting. He was actually predicting global warming 2,500 years ago. And people also were not doing the ceremonies to balance heaven and earth. And because of that, the combination of the heat toxins plus people turning away from spiritual lifestyle, he says that the devas, the angelic beings in the heaven realms, would become displeased and the rain would not come on time. First there would be droughts and then there would be floods. And because of that, the crops would suffer, and because of that, the people would become weak, and because of that, the people would be susceptible to epidemics. Well, this sounds very relevant to some of the challenges that we have now on a global scale today. And so if you go ahead to the next slide, what we see, more images of epidemics, and I'm just going to give you a few examples here, because whenever we look at epidemics and contagion, we see that it is not just a matter of microbes, because this picture, for example, in medieval Europe was a breeding ground of microbes because of the economics and the poverty. Okay, if you go to the next slide, this is the Ebola virus. Well, how did the Ebola virus take off last year? It took off very much because of politics in Africa that made healthcare less available, emergency responses less available, and so forth. So this is a little bit of political education about the potential for epidemics if we don't have a good healthcare system. Now, if you go to the next slide, well, this is a good example of why we need aromatic plants for our respiratory system. This is in China, and you may or may not know that China is having an epidemic of cancer. Well, it's obviously, undoubtedly linked to environmental contamination. And if you go to the next slide, you'll see that this is the AIDS epidemic. Okay, so that's a little bit of a political discussion just to answer that question about, well, what role do the aromatic plants have? Now, if you look at the next slide, this is sage. The aromatic plants have a very important place in the pharmacopoeias of every herbal tradition because of their antimicrobial and anti-infectious properties, and that's the link that we now have tying this back to a little bit of history into the modern form of essential oils, because the next list of oils will basically be some of the major oils that we are going to be talking about in the respiratory system. So this is what we're looking at here is sage, okay, and there's many kinds of sage. It's specifically the white sage. You will meet that oil. Then if you go to the next one, it is mint. We're going to be discussing mint in the respiratory section. If you go to the next one, this is catnip. Catnip is distilled, but it is not a major oil. It's very expensive. It's not widely available, but it has some very unique, interesting properties. It's one of the best oils for repelling mosquitoes, for example. If you go to the next one, this is Thai basil. There are many, many species of basils. We're going to concentrate on the sweet basil and the holy basil, the Tulsi holy basil. And so if you go to the next slide, number 34, this is one of the oreganos. Okay, and oregano is a very, very important oil. We need to know how to use it carefully. It is one of the oils that is burning people the most. For those of you who have done the reading on the adverse reactions reports, you will see that oregano comes up very, very frequently for burning the skin if it's applied directly without dilution, and especially when parents are told to put it directly on the skin of their children. Children are being burned by it, and it is also one of the oils that is the most caustic and irritant to the mouth and to the esophagus and to the GI tract. So many, many adverse reactions are coming because people have been told that oregano oil is so great. Well, it is so great, as long as you know how to use it right. And so slide number 35, this is a type of thyme, also very, very potent medicinal plant that we should know how to use. The next one, slide 36, is actually an aromatic from Chinese medicine. This is called schizonepeta. Okay, it's a type of, it's a relative of catnip. And then if you go to number 37, this is the holy basil. Okay, and this is a major herb that we are going to be studying. And then number 38, is going to be tea tree, a major one. Let's just keep on going. This is something that you can refer back to. This is a little reference document, so that as we go, now you have a visual reference for the plants as well. The next one, 39, geranium. A lot of research has been done, and tea tree and lavender and geranium and many others have been found to have extensive antimicrobial powers. 40 is lemongrass. This is a very important aromatic plant as well. And let's just go ahead and wrap up this slideshow. We have just a few more. Number 41 is niuli. This is a relative of tea tree. It's a type of melaleuca. It's actually an invasive species, which is nice because we can distill it and we can get a medicine and control it at the same time. Then if you go to the next slide, number 42, this is the palmarosa grass. We're going to be studying this. And basically, what we see then with distillation is you take a huge amount of plant material and you put it into the still. If you go to 43, here's an image of the distillation. You can see the oil rising to the top. And that oil represents all of that plant material. And in some cases, it's really extreme, like 7,000 pounds of rose petals to get 1 liter of oil. So a huge amount of plant material comes out highly concentrated. And then if you go to number 44, you see that the whole practice of aromatherapy is making it biocompatible again, diluting it back again. Okay, so a lot of things have been discovered about the use of essential oils just in a diffuser. They found that it is very, very beneficial for prevention of colds and flus, and even used in hospitals for reducing the contagion of MRSA and so forth. So if you go to 35, now we're going to talk a little bit for just a couple minutes about some of the complexities of using essential oils, and then we're going to actually jump into the practicalities of what you can do for the next week to make some blends for yourself. Now, this information is actually in the article that accompanies this slideshow, but I'm going to just sum it up quickly before we close this. And that is to point out that there's a lot of confusion about what essential oils do when it comes to their antimicrobial powers. Now, there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever that essential oils have very strong antimicrobial powers. No question about it. The confusion is coming because information that is gathered in scientific research is being taken out of context. So the scientific research looks very, very specifically at certain strains of microbes in certain conditions, in certain stages of replication. Okay? So here's an example. There's a this is the name of the study, comparative study on the antiviral activity derived from essential oils. And what they're looking at here is essential oils from eucalyptus, tea tree, thyme, against herpes simplex 1 in vitro. And that's always what you're going to find, is that these studies are done in vitro. What does that mean? In a petri dish, okay? That's the primary thing that is problematic about the research, because the essential oils are not biocompatible. They're not water-soluble, okay, which means that they can't get into the body the way the herbs can if they're taken as a tea, okay? They're highly caustic to the mucous membranes, as you know. They cannot safely be ingested in any significant amounts without becoming either greatly irritant to the digestive tract or toxic to the liver or toxic to the nervous system and so forth. We've covered that in detail. So, going on, with this particular study, what we find is that the essential oils that were researched, tea tree, eucalyptus, and thyme, were able to reduce viral infectivity greater than 96%. Okay, now that is astounding information, all right? And a lot of these studies have that kind of information, and not only is it astounding, that the essential oils will kill almost 100% of the microbes, but they will also kill an equal amount of microbes that are resistant to drugs. That's what's exciting about the essential oil research. But here's the problem, is that's in a petri dish, okay? That's not in the human body. All right, now, as you go through and you read this article, there's going to be a lot of examples of this that you can take some further time and unpack and read about. Go ahead to the next slide, okay? So you can see here a petri dish with something that's growing. That's where this information is coming from. So what this basically means is that essential oils are really good when they come directly into contact with the microbes, okay? But once the microbe is actually in the body, a completely different mechanism is required to get the drug, meaning the monoterpenes or whatever active constituents are, to get the essential oil as a drug into the tissues. That's where all of the research is going right now, because that's, you know, that represents a huge breakthrough in medicine. To be able to figure out how to actually make essential oils biocompatible is a very, very big subject of research right now, because they do have these great powers. It's just that we cannot translate that and say, here is this study that says oregano oil kills all these microbes, therefore take oregano oil in this particular form. That's where the problem comes, is that the science does tell us very powerful antimicrobial benefits, but it's not practical to administer it as an antimicrobial drug. So let's go ahead and move to the next slide. And here's the lemon balm, actually, that's being talked about. And I'm just going to speed through this quickly. What it was found in another study here, Melissa officinalis affects the infectivity of enveloped herpes virus. Okay, so enveloped herpes virus basically means that the herpes virus has already been assimilated into the body. Now, here's what's interesting about it. They found that a 0.0004% dilution, that's a minuscule amount, was needed to inhibit the virus. Okay? So very, very strong information here that lemon balm oil is very good for herpes outbreaks, okay? But the research then goes on to say that that effect decreases significantly once the virus is actually multiplying in your tissues. All right, so I think that that is sufficient to really explain the concept, the difficulty that we have with translating that, and so we should spend the rest of the class, well, what do we do about it? All right, let's get some essential oils, and how are we going to use them to actually benefit our respiratory system, knowing that they do have these kinds of functions. This science is very, very important. It tells us that these oils do these kind of things against microbes. The challenge scientifically is finding the safe way to do it biologically. Let's just go ahead and scan through the rest of the images. 48 is actually a picture of Manuka. Okay, this is the lemon-scented tea tree. And 49 is eucalyptus. There's an interesting piece of information in the article. Eucalyptus, it's not just that the essential oil works against a particular microbe, whether it is in the body or in the petri dish. It's also that essential oils have very specific microbes they work against, and others they do not. And so the eucalyptus globulus, this is what this species is, it's a very important oil for the respiratory system. It's been found to be most effective for Haemophilus influenza and parainfluenza, followed in effectiveness by Streptococcus pneumonia, and its weakest actions are for mumps. Okay, so that's very, very important to understand, is that there's a spectrum of activity against the microbes. So let's go to the next one. Here's another image of tea tree, and here's another image of a petri dish, and so forth. And then finally, the last slide here in this series takes us back to the ancient uses of the aromatic plants. And let's conclude with that. Now, if you continue scrolling down, you'll see that there are a few other random slides. These are just things that didn't make it into the slideshow, and I sent you the copy that didn't have them trimmed out, so don't worry about it. There are just a few extra images. Okay, good. So now I hope that you have a much greater understanding of some of the primary topics that are listed for our module today: contagion and the antimicrobial powers of essential oils, the historical use of aromatic plants for epidemics, the in vitro and in vivo research on antimicrobial effects of essential oils, and now let's move into what are we actually going to do with the essential oils. And so there's several other files now, and this is where the fun starts. This is where we start to make our own blends, and this is where we start to actually apply things therapeutically, and this will also be what we talk about for the entire module next week, along with a few herbal suggestions to go with it. Now, because we are going to be getting into the practicalities of not just the ways to use essential oils that we have already discussed, such as diffuser and steam inhalation and so forth, there's going to be a number of other specific applications that are specific for the respiratory system. Now, I would like to mention one thing. If you do not have any background with making your own blends, then you would like a little bit of guidance on this, because the information that I am now launching into is how to blend certain oils for specific respiratory functions, specific respiratory complaints and therapeutic benefits. Now, the simple equipment, all you need basically is a mixing bottle, 1 ounce mixing bottle, 2 ounce, anything. Wide mouth is the best, and you need a pipette. And for this purpose, although it's not particularly ecological, I do suggest that you get the disposable plastic pipettes, all right? And that's really all you need. All you need is a plastic pipette and a wide mouth bottle, wide mouth jar of any size, smaller is probably best to start with a lid on it. And that's all you need to get started with blending. And the basic concept with this is that you create what's called a synergy, which is a simple mixture of your core essential oils for a particular system. And I'm going to give you ideas now about the oils that you would like for specific kinds of things. Now, for those of you who don't have this, these two items, we are making it available. And I'll just mention here that you do have the discount code aromatherapy20. And if you go to the course page, to the link on the bottom, then you'll see where you can take advantage of this. The discount code, again, aromatherapy20. That's 20% off everything in Floracopia store and 15% more off the tester kits. And we are also going to soon, I believe within a day or so actually, you can do a search on the site for a blending kit, and that's going to be available. So all the things I'm talking about will be available. A few other things will be in the kit as well. So for those of you who would like to start doing the blending, that's a simple way to do it. Now, you don't have to do that. All you need to do is basically just take a bottle and dispense a few drops into a jar, dispense a few drops from another bottle, and so forth. It's a very inexact science, okay? It's very flexible. It's like cooking. With essential oil blending, you do not have to be overly concerned. You really can't ruin anything. Okay, now, let's go ahead and look at a few other files here. And let's look, first of all, at the file titled, let's see, what is it titled for you? It is titled Major Respiratory Oils for Modules 4 and 5. Okay, now, so now we're going to be setting up all the groups of oils and how to approach them to start making respiratory therapeutic formulas. Okay, so if you open the file titled Major Respiratory Oils for modules 4 and 5. This is a list of the most important oils that are most commonly used and have the most historic background as well as good scientific evidence. These are the ones that we should think about as the core oils for making our blends for the respiratory system. And so you'll see that there are several kinds of eucalyptus, several species of eucalyptus. There's the lemon-scented, the Citriodara. There's the peppermint-scented, that's the Dives or Dives. There's the globulus. There's the rose-scented, the Macarthuri. There's the narrow leaf, the Radiata. Then there's the silver fir. And whenever we are talking about fir species, they're very interchangeable. You'll be able to find many, many species on the market. We sometimes carry a number of species also. They're relatively interchangeable, and the same with the eucalyptus, okay, relatively interchangeable. You'll see also hyssop here, an aromatic plant, a specific variety is used. Juniper, and there's a couple different species of juniper. Inula, which is a very interesting Chinese flower, actually, that's very mucolytic, and I'm going to explain these terms and how we group the oils now in terms of therapeutic categories. The manuka is the lemon-scented tea tree. Monarda is actually, it's called bee balm. It grows in the United States, and it's also known as bergamot. It's not the bergamot fruit, but it's a very important respiratory oil. Myrtle, a very important respiratory oil. Peppermint is a very, very powerful oil. In my opinion, it's overused and overrated. It has dangers. It can cause irritation to the skin. It can cause serious gastric inflammation and irritation if taken internally. But it is also very important when used correctly for the respiratory system. Various species of pine oil are also classified as major respiratory oils. And one of my favorite, and that's also because I know the distiller personally inspired him to start distilling this in Colorado, actually, the pinon pine. And then a co-distillation of pinon and juniper. And what that means is that he puts both the pinon needles and the juniper needles in the still at the same time and gets a mixture. Ravensara, we will be talking about in some detail. Very, very important essential oil, now known for having significant antiviral effects and also one of the first lines of defense against colds and flus. Rosemary, that we're going to study briefly in this section on the respiratory health, but even more when we're talking about it for talking about aromatherapy for cognitive function. Spruce, again, many species are available. We carry one of them, and tea tree, of course, Tulsi, the holy basil, was in your monograph from the last module, and then the white sage. So these are the oils that I have picked as the most important oils to have in your collection for treating the respiratory system. Now, if you would open the file titled Respiratory Therapeutics, all right? So what do we do then when we are making a formula for treating specific conditions? Well, first of all, we identify the condition. Then we identify the core oils that would be what we call the synergy, all right? And that can be one oil, it can be two oils, it can be three oils. This is what is called in Chinese medicine the chief herbs, okay? So there's a theory, there's a protocol, an approach for blending herbs in Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine that can be applied for blending essential oils for therapeutic purposes. There's a very similar concept that's also found in perfumery for making perfume blends. And so, therefore, what we see then is that you start with the synergy, or the accord, as they call it in perfumery, and that gives you the core formula that is going to have a generalized overall function that's beneficial. Then you add certain oils known to have specific therapeutic benefits to make the blend more holistic and more comprehensive. And so let's go through these oils and look at the terms here so that you understand what you're trying to do with the oils. Antitussive. That means it is soothing to a cough, all right? Now, you may or may not have a cough as the primary symptom. And so, therefore, if the cough is the primary thing, you may want to just make a synergy of antitussive oils primarily, okay? Or you may want to start with a synergy of, say, eucalyptus and spruce and fir, something like that. There's lots of ways to do this. I will be giving you lots of recipes. They're already there in the monographs that we can look at. And you start adding certain things that have the function that you're looking for. So if the cough is the primary thing you're looking for, what about the rock rose, the cistus? Well, that's a beautiful perfume ingredient, very sweet, very soothing. Eucalyptus, you see it is already antitussive, frankincense. Inula, the flower oil there, antitussive is soothing to the cough. Juniper, peppermint, pinyon pine, here's the whole list. Okay, the rosemary, chemotype cineal, that's what that means. I'll unpack that more as we go along. CT means chemotype. It means that there's a specific concentration of a compound called cineol, okay, which is actually also called eucalyptol. And so that means that the rosemary has a high concentration of compounds that are very similar to eucalyptus. Then, next major category, anti-inflammatory. If the respiratory condition that you are treating has a significant presence of inflammation, you would think about chamomile, a nice cooling blue oil, frankincense, cooling, helichrysum, a cooling flower, jatamansi, cooling root, lavender, cooling flower, and so on. Then we say, well, here's the next category, antimicrobial. Well, aren't they all antimicrobial? Yes, but many oils have specific known antimicrobial functions for the respiratory system, like tulsi, holy basil, like the Palo Santo, the pinyon pine. So this is a list then that narrows it down a bit so that it helps you understand every oil has antimicrobial powers, but how are you going to use certain ones that target the respiratory system specifically? Then the next category, antispasmodic. Okay, well, that's self-explanatory. The cough is spasmodic. You want it to relax. Can you use antispasmodic and anti-inflammatory and antitussive oils all together? Yes, of course. That's what your blend is about. Anti-asthmatic, okay? That is self-explanatory. Balsamic means that it is soothing to the mucous membranes of the lungs, all right? And that's a very different kind of function. And there's less oils that are really known to be soothing, okay, and they become more soothing if you put them with steam, for example. You can find more oils that are soothing, but the two primary ones, frankincense and sandalwood. Now, the origins of this information, the sources of this information, is from many different sources, and this is confusing because many people say all kinds of things about essential oils, and that's one of the problems, both with the marketing and with the newness, okay, of the subject. Really, modern aromatherapy is really just about 10 years old, and there's all kinds of people saying all kinds of things about these oils do this and these oils do that, and it gets very confusing. People say, that one oil will do all these kinds of things, or the one thing can be treated with all these oils. And when you start doing the research and looking at it, there's very little consensus. And that's what's problematic about it, is where is this information coming from? Is it coming from personal experience? Is it coming because there's a study that says that in a petri dish that it will do this? A lot of the information, in my opinion, is coming secondhand, thirdhand, and fourthhand. And so my job here to present this responsibly is to basically distill a lot of information together and find the common threads. And so that's what I have done. These are things that correspond to both my own personal clinical experience and my understanding of the chemistry of the oils and traditional historical uses of the plants and modern scientific research and what a number of modern sources, modern authors, speakers, educators agree on. Okay, so that's how this information is there. So decongestant, that means that it basically opens up the sinuses. Okay, well, there's a lot of oils that will do this, but these are the most famous. Now we come to expectorant. That's a self-explanatory. It means that it loosens the phlegm in the chest so that it is more easily expelled, expectorated. Now, what's interesting here is that so many oils can be found listed, given as reliable expectorants. So, if we look at the function of the essential oils, we can start to understand that they have different activities. Some are going to be stronger antimicrobials against certain strains of microbes. Some are going to be a little more anti-asthmatic and so forth. But lots of oils are going to help to loosen the kapha, loosen the phlegm, and get it out of the lungs. That's because the aromatic plants have that general stimulant effect on the mucous membrane. Now, keep in mind, you can get that expectorant effect not just by breathing the essential oils from the diffuser, direct palm inhalation, steam inhalation, all the things we've already talked about. You can also accentuate that effect by drinking some of these aromatic plants as tea. So, for example, if you use some of these expectorant oils in a diffuser, you can also see here several that you can use as herbs. So, for example, diffusing cardamom is going to have a nice effect for helping to expectorate. You can also chew cardamom seeds at the same time. You can diffuse the Tulsi holy basil or the sweet basil. That will help with expectoration, but you can also use the sweet basil in your cooking, and you can drink Tulsi tea. Okay, you can make the white sage tea. You can diffuse the white sage for expectorant purposes. Now, if you're using things on both levels, that means that you're hitting the congestion from both the exterior and the interior at the same time. So this is how you can start to think about incorporating herbal medicine into the treatment of respiratory conditions as well. So let's go to the final category here, therapeutically, of mucolytic. What that means is it basically helps to dissolve and soften the congestion. Okay, so it makes the phlegm in the chest more liquefied so that it will be expectorated more easily. All right. Okay, so I hope that you find this very helpful. And so now let me go ahead and let's see if we have time here. I don't think we have time to actually do some specific therapeutics yet, but I want to bring your attention to the monographs. Okay, so in the next module, what we're going to do then is we're going to look at a lot of different specific formulas, but they're also here in your monographs. And you can go ahead and you can start to connect all this information together, and even before we get to class next week, you will have a huge amount of information for making some blends and using them in some different ways. So let's look at the monographs for modules 4 and 5. These are the oils that I have picked that I think are the most important to really study in some detail. Inula. Okay, well, let's leave this as a homework assignment. This will be one of your deepening practices. Read all these modules, all these monographs. But let's just go ahead and scroll through here. So first we come to fir. Let me see, what happened to our inula? Okay, there it is. If you will scroll down with me, what I want to focus on here to get you started with some of the therapeutics, applied therapeutics here, is I want to point out the final section of each monograph. This is where you're going to find how to use these oils. Excuse me. I'm getting expectorant effects just reading it. How to use fir essential oil. So if you scroll down, fir oil to the paragraph, how to use fir essential oil. That's where the therapeutics really start. This oil can be diffused, used in direct inhalations, used in the bath water, or topically. Now, this oil, very low dermatoxic potential. This is not an oil that we have to worry about burning our skin with, okay? To promote respiratory and musculoskeletal health. You're going to see that a lot of these oils also cross over into the musculoskeletal inflammation category. So 2 to 3 drops of fir oil in the bath water, okay, or here's a recipe for a massage oil, 5 to 6 drops in an ounce of carrier oil. Now, because it's low dermotoxic potential, you can add more, okay? It's a relatively safe oil. You use that on the joints and the muscles for reducing inflammation, helping with spasms and cramps, and it warms the circulation. It also, the fir oil, a lot of these respiratory oils also cross over into oils that are also really good for our mood and for clarifying the mind. And so here, a few recipes here for you for the muscles and joints, and here's a recipe for purifying the atmosphere. Grand fir or silver fir, juniper, cypress, cedar wood, okay? These are very flexible. If you want to be precise, you have a pipette, you want to measure it exactly, that's fine. You don't have to worry about it, though. Keep in mind that you can also translate the term drops into parts, and that means 8 teaspoons of fir, 4 teaspoons of juniper, and so forth. And then, of course, if you're a large-scale manufacturer, you're going to think 8 gallons of fir and 4 gallons of juniper. So parts, think in terms of parts. Now, here's a specific recipe for sinus allergies, okay? And these are a few things that are commonly known that are good for sinuses, and a couple of things that are not well known, a few personal recommendations here. So sinus allergies, 2 parts of laurel, 4 parts of eucalyptus, and I did not specify what type of eucalyptus because that's very flexible. But in general, for the respiratory system, the 2 species that are the most commonly used are going to be the globulus and the radiata. And so 4 parts of radiata or globulus, 4 parts of fir, whatever fir you like. The fir oils are very interchangeable. And then here, you have a new oil that's unique, a kind of secret recommendation based on my clinical experience, ginger grass oil. And ginger grass is a relative of lemongrass, and lemongrass is a relative of citronella. They are all in the Cymbopogon family. Okay, so ginger grass is kind of like a mildly warming, spicy kind of lemongrass oil. Easily available, not very expensive. Now keep in mind that you can do whatever you want with this blend. You could just use 2 drops of laurel. You could just use 4 drops of eucalyptus. You could just put those 2 together. You can be very, very creative with how you do this. There are no real set rules, okay? Let's go ahead and scroll down to the inula. This is a very, very important oil. I have met this oil, but I have not used it extensively. I have met it coming from the still, from a distiller on Corsica, and it is a beautiful oil. And the reason that I included it is because it is highly regarded in aromatherapy as one of the major mucolytic expectorants, okay? And so respiratory health, if you scroll down, you'll see here, this is a really good blend for basically opening up congestion of the chest, okay? 2 parts inula, 2 parts myrtle, 1 part peppermint. I always put the peppermint concentration very, very low. Some people actually have sensitivities to the mints, okay? Some people can actually get an unpleasant toxic headache from mint oil, so you should be careful of that. Eucalyptus, quite safe, and then pine, all right? And so you can dilute this, you can put it in the carrier oil, and here is something we're going to unpack a bit more next week, and that is specific ways of using oils other than just the diffuser, palm inhalation, steam inhalation, so forth. You can also make these into chest rubs, and so you can basically put it in a carrier oil as a chest rub, but you can also put it into salves. You can get a salve base, all right, that maybe is already compounded specifically as a chest rub for respiratory conditions. You can spice it up more. You can add your own oils to that. You can also put it into unscented base of cream and lotion and so forth. We'll talk about the specific details a bit next week. Now, another one that I want you to read through very carefully here, laurel. Laurel is a very, very important oil, and very strong. It's got a kind of cinnamon note to it. It's a great mental stimulant. And also, formula, another blend here for you, a decongestant and expectorant blend. This has laurel, the eucalyptus, cedar, frankincense. Those are all the ones that were on your previous list of expectorant and decongestant. Then the other oil, since we are now running out of time, Monarda oil. This is the bee balm. This actually has more of a floral kind of note to it. It's a beautiful oil. We don't carry it, but it is easily accessible. And it, because it has these floral notes, it's not good just for the respiratory system, but also very good as kind of a calming, relaxing, anti-anxiety type of oil as well. And so Monarda is commonly listed. It is well known in the world of aromatherapy as a major respiratory oil, so I have included it. And again, what you see here is that it crosses over. If you go down to the recipe section of Monarda, what you see here is that it crosses over between the respiratory function and the emotional functions. And so there's a blend here that is for sinus infections. Okay, Monarda is a specific oil for the sinuses, and eucalyptus tea tree is a specific oil for sinus infection. Lavender, cooling for sinus infections also. Then you'll see that Monarda is also used anti-anxiety. And so for that, the chamomile is also relaxing, neroli, orange blossom, the citruses, the lavender, the flowers. And from my personal experience, I put in the Palo Santo because that is a relative of frankincense, actually, therapeutically, and very, very calming. Scrolling through, just to give you the rest of this, this will be your homework assignment. Myrtle, very, very important respiratory oil. Again, you're going to see many ways of using this particular oil. There's no specific formulas here, but lots of ways to use it in the bath. A couple of blends there are mentioned just in how to use it. Diffuser, palm inhalation, and I'll mention that steam inhalation of myrtle oil is a specific treatment for sinus allergy. So I hope that now that we are into the actual therapeutics, that you are getting something substantial that's going to help you right now, today, if you have these oils. Continuing on, we see the wonderful benefits of pine oil and lots of scientific information and lots of good formulas here, including house spray, winter immune support, and then one of my favorite oils, the pinon pine. And you'll see that a lot of this is very similar to the other pine oils, but it is a specific type of species of pine. And then finally, the spruce oil down at the bottom. Okay, so we are now fully into respiratory therapeutics, and you now have a full list of the major respiratory oils that you can procure for yourself if you do not have them. We have covered the historical background about contagion and introduced the bigger subject of the antimicrobial powers. Now we are starting to break down the oils into specific therapeutic categories as antitussive, anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial. I've given you the basic introduction to what you would like to do to create a core blend. And I'm going to unpack that further next week, and you don't have to worry about it because you have so many recipes to work with on the monographs from not just this week, but last week also, last module also. Many recipes, for example, in the tea tree monograph and the tulsi monograph and so forth, many of those oils that were in the last module are also very important oils for the respiratory system. So we're going to see that frequently, that we will refer back to monographs from other sections. And what I will do is I will post the monographs again on a weekly basis so you don't have to keep going back looking for them in past modules. So next week, what I will do then is post all the relevant monographs together, and we will continue studying more specific blends and applying them to specific types of respiratory conditions such as bronchitis and allergies and inflammation and infection and so forth. And then we can answer lots of specific therapeutic questions, and you'll get a lot of good recipes that way. Okay, so our time is finished for the lecture part, but we have a few more minutes. I hope that you found this helpful, a good introduction to the therapeutic section for the respiratory system. You have a lot of information to work with now, and I will go ahead and open it up for any kinds of questions. Keep in mind that if you submit a question on the webcast and I do not get around to answering it on the call, I will always answer it in a file the following week. I answer all the questions, okay? So if you do not get your call answered, if you call in and we don't get to your call, you can submit the webcast. You can submit the same question by the webcast and it will get answered. And also, for those of you who are listening in later in the week who are not here in person, you can submit your questions through the webcast anytime during the week. So that way, everybody in the class will get all of your questions answered within a week. Okay, so Colleen, I'm going to turn it back to you, and I will just open it up. Does anybody have any questions, concerns, complaints, testimonials, anything that you would like to share at this point? It's open for you.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. David. I did want to say that I'm very grateful that you're providing all of this space for question and answer for everyone. And as of this week, you'll note under the module that the webcast Q&A file is right there, and it is the questions from the previous weeks. So thank you so much, David, for that. That's just awesome. And I'll start just with a webcast question from Linda, and she's saying that her mother has end-stage COPD. Last winter, I made her an inhaler consisting of equal parts of inula, eucalyptus radiata, and laurel. Would this lend benefit from the addition of frankincense to add some soothing quality to the blend? She does say that she gets a lot of benefit from it the way it is, but I could maybe improve it.
Yes, frankincense would be an excellent addition. I would definitely recommend that. Good blend.
Beautiful. Okay, and we'll go to Regina. You have the mic. Go ahead, please, Regina.
Hi, it's pronounced Regina, but that's okay. Can you hear me?
Sorry.
Yes.
That's okay.
And we can hear you, and go ahead.
Thank you so much. Well, I broke my ankle and leg very badly in late February, and I'm still experiencing a lot of swelling and pain, and there's many broken blood vessels and little veins that have occurred. I'm wondering if you could recommend a blend that would help heal it a little more quickly and maybe take those veins down.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to be studying this. Let me just check here on the number of what the module is, but we actually have at least one module dedicated to this. Let me see, where are we? Yes, module number 9, musculoskeletal system. I can go ahead and give a recommendation.
Oh, thank you.
And that is to use the helichrysum oil. Helichrysum is the number one choice for injuries, trauma, circulatory issues, bruising, soft tissue injuries, and so forth. And helichrysum is relatively safe for direct application. Some people, it can be a little sensitive if you put too much of it directly on your face, for example. So what I would do is I would start with it in a carrier oil, but it can be a fairly high concentration. You know, you can actually use like up to 50%. Because it's very safe on the skin. But the other thing is that helichrysum oil is very expensive. And so that may be a concern, but it does go a long ways. And then also the other oil that is really very, very good for this is frankincense oil. And so I commonly recommend the combination of helichrysum and frankincense together. And both of those are low dermotoxic oils. They're relatively safe to apply directly. You could easily just put them on as straight oils and then cover them with a carrier oil, or vice versa, or mix them into the carrier oil. Of course, the sensitivity, the reaction, depends very much on your skin, the health of your skin, whether you know your skin is very thin and dry, if you have a history of the skin being reactive, then I wouldn't recommend putting those oils directly on in large amounts repeatedly. Okay, I would definitely recommend diluting them down in a carrier oil. But if you were to take a carrier oil, say 1 ounce of a carrier oil, and then put, say, 10 drops of the helichrysum and 10 drops of the frankincense in it, you will have a very safe and very effective application for that. And I hear more testimonials about the healing power of helichrysum than just about anything else. So that is an excellent oil for that. And sorry to hear about the injury, but I think if you do that, you may be able to call us back relatively soon with a good report.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all your wonderful knowledge and information.
Well, thank you. You're most welcome. Okay, so we have time for maybe one more.
Okay, thank you so much, David. This is a question from Mabel. For Monica Tea Tree, would the essential oil that contains the antibacterial activity come from the flower or the leaf? And one more small question on that. When the plant from which the essential oil is harvested is diseased, like with bugs or infected, does that impact the quality of the essential oil?
Okay, so I believe the question was, is the oil distilled from the leaves or the flowers, correct?
Yes, from the tea tree.
From what type of tea tree? Monica, are you saying?
Manuka.
Oh, Manuka. Okay,
yeah.
Manuka. Thank you. Okay. So Manuka is a species of Melaleuca, and Melaleuca is the tea tree. Okay, so this is called the lemon-scented tea tree. Now, typically, the oil will mostly come from the leaves, but the distiller will often end up with flowers in there also. Okay, so I would say that the majority of the oil is from the leaves, but probably flowers make it in there also. Okay, and what was the second part of the question? Is the plant diseased? Well, that's definitely a quality control issue that distillers are going to be aware of, and distillers will not be distilling diseased plant material. Because diseased plant material in general will yield less oil than healthy plants, and the yield of the oil is very, very important. So that's the quick answer to that. That's a big distillation and botany question, but it's a good question. So I hope that answers that. And with that, I think it's time to sign off, and so I will just encourage everybody, read the monographs, and that is your homework assignment. Your homework assignment is also to enjoy making some blends and to experiment with them safely, following the safety guidelines that we have outlined. And in addition to that, I invite you to the breakout groups, and the breakout groups are an excellent place to get more information and learn more from your fellow students and contribute what you know to fellow students, and a place to share your experiences. And I'll also invite you to the social media group that is available, and I will also invite you, if you have any specific medical kinds of concerns related to the field of aromatherapy, you can also contact me at the email address that's given. So lots of opportunities to discuss the learning process, what you are learning, and the information. Okay, so Colleen, I'll turn it back to you. I will just say thank you to everybody from all over the world for your interest in this very important and complex and very wonderful subject. Thank you for joining me here again this week. Have a great week of exploring the oils, and I'll talk to you next week.
Wonderful. Thank you so, so much, David, from all of us.